Ludwig von Beethoven was once booked to play a concert for a polite upper-crust audience whom he suspected of not being too serious about music. To start out, Beethoven played a movement that was very soft and gentle. Just what they wanted, and just what they expected. At the end of it, they were all feeling very comfortable and cozy, and the audience could just sit back and relax, maybe even just fall half asleep. Just as the final notes were fading, Beethoven paused a fraction of a second and did that, brought his entire forearm crashing down on the keyboard. So now they were awake. They were also shocked, and some of them weren't too happy, because this was not the nice, demure concert that they had bargained for. Jesus wasn't always a nice, demure person either. He's sometimes pictured that way. And of course, he was kind and loving and accepted people, but he also challenged people, and he really wanted them to be serious about his passion, serious about the kingdom of God. So today he says something shocking to kind of jolt us out of our complacency and our sleepiness. He says, "I've come to throw fire on the earth." When I was preparing this homily, I looked at a Bible commentary on this passage, and it said dryly, "The Greek structure of this verse indicates impatience." No kidding. Yeah, we really didn't need a Greek scholar to tell us that. Jesus is deeply impatient here, impatient for a rearrangement of the world. Fire is a symbol of transformation. At some point in your life, you might have had a dream where your house burned down. I have, and at first this seems like kind of a bad omen, of course, seems like a dream about destruction. But dream scholars tell us that this is actually hardly ever the case. It is seldom a bad sign to dream about fire. It means that somewhere in your life you're going through a transformation, that there's a new birth coming, a new beginning. So it's a good thing, actually. Jesus dreamed of setting the world on fire in the sense of fundamentally changing things. He dreamed of a world where there are no outsiders, where everyone's included, where there's no patriarchy and no racism, no one above anyone else, where there's no poverty, no one has too much, no one has too little, and no violence, just peace with the earth and each other. Just a reminder, this isn't politics. This is the gospel. Today we meet Jesus at a point where he's frustrated because he thought this vision would take root more by now. He thought maybe more change would have happened. How great is my anguish until this is accomplished? So this is a very human moment. I think we've all been asking a lot lately about a lot of different things. Why is this taking so long? Why, in a country as wealthy as ours, is there rampant child poverty in Rochester? Why do we not take really fearless action on climate change? Why is white supremacy still alive? Why do we still have so many guns? You raise these topics and you often meet resistance, as I expect all of you guys know. Like the prophet Jeremiah, some people in the first reading that we heard, some people didn't like that he kept talking about hard things so insistently. They thought he was just lowering morale, so they threw him into a cistern. Today, some folks say about the January 6th hearings, can't we just stop focusing on this? All it's doing is lowering people's spirits. You raise tough topics in polite dinner table conversation, and you might hear something like, why do you have to bring that up? Why are you being such a downer? Can't we just talk about nice things? But nice isn't always what we're supposed to be. Niceness is not a gospel value. Kindness, yes. Niceness, no. True. Sister Joan Chittister tells about a time when someone called her convent and just lit into the nuns saying, I don't know how you sisters can keep causing a ruckus by agitating all the time against nuclear weapons. It's not nice. Joan replied, thank you. She said it was one of the greatest compliments she had ever received because she had been a churchwoman for a long time. And the church maybe spends too much time being nice and not enough time speaking up about hard problems. Jesus was willing not to be liked by everybody and to say things that not everyone was going to agree with. I have come to cause division. Today he shows a holy impatience at meeting the same resistance over and over again to the coming of God's kingdom. Roe and Jerry Lynch, Aaron's parents, have a wooden sign in their yard that says Black Lives Matter. Now, putting up a sign like that in my neighborhood might be a strong statement, but it probably doesn't come with a personal risk to me. A lot of my neighbors think the way I do, and there are a lot of these signs in yards, thank goodness. But that's not true out where the Lynches live. It's a really brave thing to display a sign like that out in their part of the world. A couple of weeks after they put it up, it was burned on their front lawn. They fixed it up, and they put it back out there with the burn marks still around the edges. Later, it was knocked down by some sort of collision. They're thinking maybe a truck hitting it. It was beaten up. It was partially broken apart. That's pretty fierce opposition and pretty scary, and of course so symbolic of this larger spiritual struggle that we seem to be going through as a country. So I expect they feel a holy impatience, Roe and Jerry, that this keeps happening, that they keep having to fight this battle, as we all do. But the people doing this, whoever they are, they didn't know what they were in for. They didn't realize that Jerry is a carpenter. So each time he takes the sign indoors and he builds a new and stronger one. Now it's got steel beams in it to reinforce it. Right, so it can withstand being hit. And he puts it back out there on the lawn. It just went out for a new time last night, I'm told. So we thank them for their perseverance, Roe and Jerry. There's good news behind this challenging gospel, and that good news is Jesus' passion itself. Even though he sometimes got frustrated, there's a power behind frustration. There was a fire burning inside him that steeled him, that reinforced his resolve, and kept him strong when the world tried to knock him down. And that can keep us going too. It's important to pay attention to what really does light a fire inside each of us. If we know the answer to that, then I think we have the key as to what God wishes for us to do, the way we're supposed to make a difference in the world. And of course, it's hard sometimes when the world is hurting in so many ways to decide specifically what we are supposed to do. It's overwhelming. There are so many needs. They're all equally serious. I like something that the writer Frederick Buechner says. He says, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Once a dutiful monk went to see his teacher, Abba Joseph, and he said, I feel like I'm stuck in my spiritual life. I don't know why. I pray, I meditate, I study the Bible, I try to be an ethical person. What more can I do? And without a word, Abba Joseph stood up and stretched out his hands, and all 10 of his fingers became like lamps of fire. If you will, he said, you can become all flame. Don't forget the passion. There's an endearing story about the writer Nathaniel Hawthorne. When he was a young man, he had the opportunity to be a part of this intentional community, this working farm where people were trying very hard to live out Jesus' vision. They were creating a little utopia on earth. And he was a great idealist, so he was so excited for this. When he got there, the leaders explained that here everybody pitched in with the labor of the farm to keep it going. Everybody was assigned to work duty and the roles shifted. Everybody took a turn doing everything. Well, this was a part of life there that he hadn't considered. For his first assignment, they sent him to shovel the manure pile. And like that, he was out of there. He ran, gave up utopia on the spot. There's a lot of labor that's not glamorous that goes into working for a better world. Some of it is totally thankless, in fact. And what keeps us from bolting from all this when the going gets hard is having a flame, having a passion, something that brings us alive. I think Jesus had to cultivate something additional as well. I think he had to learn to be impatient with injustice, but patient with people, deeply patient with anyone who was even a little bit open to his message. 10 years ago, when I was finishing up seminary and first preparing for parish ministry, I received a really good piece of advice. A senior colleague who had served churches for many years said that a good parish pastor is someone who sees things as they are and sees things as they could be and loves them both. And I've carried that with me ever since. Most young pastors come in with a grand sweeping vision. A lot of them come in thinking of how they're going to totally change the first church they're sent to. But it doesn't matter how great the vision is if the people aren't with you. And this applies to a lot of different parts of all of our lives, I think. Anytime you work with human beings, you have to be patient. You have to figure out how to be patient and passionate at the same time. It's worth the extra time to bring people along with you, because the foibles and the quirks and the doubts and the questions, they're not obstacles in your way. They're part of the beauty of the way things are. And if you don't have a genuine affection for that, then you really can't even begin to move toward the way things might be. Jesus had a real gift for understanding this. We have to remember that he loved people first before he tried to change anything. And he stopped for folks along the way, like the woman with the flow of blood who reached out and tugged on his cloak and interrupted him when he had another agenda, like Bartimaeus, the blind beggar who called out to him from the sidelines, like the Roman centurion who seemed to be an opponent at first, but really wasn't. He hadn't planned on any of their questions, but he didn't brush them off. He didn't barge ahead. He didn't say, hey, look, I've got my own thing going on here, so stop distracting me. He stopped. He paid attention. He listened to people. He heard their concerns. And most of his ministry happened one small healing at a time. Anytime we have a big dream for our life, whether that's reaching sobriety or working on a difficult relationship or repairing some wound within ourselves, we tend to start out with a grand vision of how things have to be totally different. But getting there doesn't happen overnight. It happens slowly. It happens one step at a time. We have to meet people where they are, including ourselves. We have to see things as they might be and as they are, and somehow love them both. As a young man, another colleague of mine named John was sent to a falling down church for his first call to ministry. It was literally falling apart. It needed a new roof, new lights, a new boiler. It was on the edge of financial ruin. The parish had dwindled to about 20 people, and there didn't seem to be much life in any of the ministries. So it seemed like nothing could save the place except a total overhaul. Everything had to change. So what did John do? He noticed the fridge in the kitchen was broken. And in the old days, the kitchen had really been the heart of community around this particular church. The people loved to cook and prepare meals together and then feast. So it was a small thing, but this broken down fridge seemed especially demoralizing because it meant the kitchen was out of commission, and that seemed like a symbol of the church's heart failure. So John made a very modest proposal, very modest. He suggested to the parish that they could find it within them to raise money for a new fridge that actually worked. If everybody was part of it, if they marshaled everyone, maybe they could manage to buy one. And as small as this suggestion was really a reach for them at that time. But the people got excited because they saw that their pastor had faith in them, and they were happy to be asked to be part of something. And they thought maybe they could do it. So with a great effort, a long campaign, the length of a campaign that a big church would do for a roof, they bought a fridge. And it was like this beam of light breaking through. It just changed everything. It lifted people up. It had been so long since they believed in themselves. And now they started to feel like maybe they could buy a new boiler. Maybe they could fix the roof. The bigger things started to seem within reach. Maybe they could change the world. The best way to move toward a big dream is to realize you can accomplish a small one. So it really is worth taking time to celebrate the small steps. So Jesus teaches us about being impatient with injustice, but patient with people. He shows us about being kind rather than nice. He shows us the value of bringing others along with us, even if that means moving a little slower at first. This is the gospel way, and it's worth it in the end. An old proverb says, if you want to go fast, walk alone. If you want to go far, walk with others. This is how we'll set the world on fire.